Hey team, welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Research Mini-Series. Welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Research Mini-Series for episode number 3. Today I'm joined by Dr. Sandy McQuarrie and we are going to jump straight into how can you get started in research, and we're going to break it down today, or shall I say Sandy's going to break it down today, in terms of making it quite manageable and quite easy to get started. This is going to hopefully break down some of the preconceived ideas that research can be really challenging to get into and not knowing where to start. So let's jump into it.
I'd be interested in knowing, as a podcast creator, which I'm not, but you are, what the impact has been of the Student Paramedic Podcast on your listeners, whom are paramedics. Wouldn't that be cool? It sounds kind of like a research kind of theme, doesn't it?
It does sound like a research theme, yes.
Well, you're going to let go of the yellow rope now. Let's say, like, I would really want to know the answer to that question, because you've got hundreds of thousands of downloads. You probably get comments and all those sorts of things. But how do you know that it changed, that someone learned something, that there was a new neural associations, and that practice has changed because of what you did over the air? I think you should research it, and I'm ready to help you.
Okay. Help me get started, Sandy.
All right. Do you think you have enough information that you'd want to formulate a research question? And is that the way you want to start? And it's a yes or a no. We're going to do it together.
I guess, yes. I mean, there's a basis there to start the research question.
Yeah. So what I recommend when people kind of show up at my door, or I've trapped them and to come into my office and talk research, is to challenge them in two ways. The first is to say, do you have anything that resembles a research question? And remember, in quantitative, it's usually pretty easy to do, and qualitative, not so much. And the second is, has someone already done it? And if that's the case, if someone's done the Student Paramedic Podcast and studied it and published it, then there's probably, we can knock off early because you're done. But using your show as an example of how to formulate a question and go to the literature are probably the first two things that you want to do. And it may not be, you may not be able to formulate a question for some time. But I think that invites the ability for you to examine who else has done work in the area where they've studied the effectiveness of a podcast. So I would ask, where would you go to find the answer to that question?
I would go and have a look on some online databases to see if there's any previous studies or research.
Absolutely. So let's be very specific, though. How are you going to do that?
Would I be formulating my PICO question now, or just do a general search?
Maybe. I would do a general search first. If people want like kind of finite chunks about how to get in there, let's be really exact. I would start with something as simple as a Google search on paramedic podcasts, student paramedic podcasts, and see what the web spits out, number one. And the kind of what you would want to chase down, I believe, would be student podcast, student paramedic podcast as a educational tool. And that, so you put in student podcast educational tool, and I put the suffix scholarly articles at the end, and it's only going to bring up articles. And so it'll kick out everything it finds in Google Scholar. And what a great place to start. And you know, your Saturday afternoon is finding, well, the first 10 or 20 hits and seeing if they're making sense. And it turns out it has been studied, not paramedics, though, but in other ways, they've looked at podcasts as an effective learning tool. And you've started to do you started to move towards that ability to conduct your own research and create new knowledge. So we'll pause for a second. You've, although I see how I shaped that.
That was really good.
We've shaped it into something that's relevant to you. I think it is. You've been doing this for a while and you do a great job at it. You've allowed me to suggest an area that you could explore, and that is the use of your podcast as an educational tool for paramedics and others. And with further, we've suggested between us that we could look in the kind of the World Wide Web of Things, do a quick search and do a more specific search using the suffix scholarly articles at the end and see what pops up. And I'm telling you, there will be some, I'm sure, predicting that say that there's really good evidence to support podcasts of a certain kind for a certain profession and their effectiveness. And this is how they measured effectiveness. Wow, you're going much faster than I thought you were going to go.
It's great to have someone on my shoulder just helping me out here, Sandy.
Well, if I were you, I would be studying that podcast, but that's just me. So what we want to do across these shows is we can talk abstract all you want, but if it gets to the point where what do I have to do next or what should I do next, we want to be able to suggest some things that you can do next. That raises, you use the term PICO, and really when we talked, when we talk research, we always think about randomized controlled trials with hypotheses and drug A is better than drug B. And we do a PICO question that will start to inform us about how to frame our research project, population intervention, comparator, and outcome. In your case, you know, we're just trying to find if there's a way to measure if learning has taken place with your listeners. So that would be, you could populate the PICO like that, understanding you're doing a type of research, not so much a randomized controlled trial where it's drug A versus drug B, for instance, but you're essentially painting a descriptive profile of the into your podcast, perhaps over a period of a year, and if their attitudes towards things have either changed or are measurably different. And you'd use quantitative tools, perhaps, number scales and things like that, or qualitative tools where you would interview them and be able to understand they're talking, they all have these same things in common. They're talking about how their study habits have improved after listening to these particular episodes. So that's nudging it a little bit further along. And then you go back to the literature and read some more. I would go back to the literature and read, if I found a paper that I liked, I would go through its reference list and get those papers and so on and so on. And as you, it took me a long time to do this, as you build that library, and I'm recommending to everyone to get either EndNote or Zotero or Mendeley to start to kind of keep track of these papers, is that you'll start to see the same groups of people. And you'll start to see the same theories, and you'll start to see the same methodologies or, you know, variations. And all of that will help you in terms of being able to create what is going to be a research question with a theoretical framework and a conceptual framework, which is, you know, getting pointier and pointier. So we'll pause for a moment, let that sink in. You probably want to do this project now, don't you?
I actually do, yeah.
I was thinking about it. No, and it's not a matter of, and for the folks that are listening, this is just simply such a good exemplar because I've chosen to engage you, Alex, in something that you're very close to and passionate about, which is the podcast, in a way that, and at the same time, sparking your imagination, which is how I've worked with these students that we talked about in another episode over the many years and got them to be very successful in what they did. Yeah. Okay, so I think to start off to recap is you're searching for something to do research on. We know that there's all kinds of clinical stuff that will be available to us. It's just there. But underneath it all, I'm advocating that you have a passion or a strong interest in the question or the thing that you want to study. And without it, it's really hard. Now, in the ether of the, you know, the universe, you have to find probably a subject matter expert in that area. And it could be as close as an educator with the Ambulance Service or another podcast host or a researcher of podcasts, and start to study them and perhaps start to ask them questions. When I was formulating my research questions for my PhD, I like literally for months I would wander up and down the hall and just stop in people's offices and just say, I want to show you my research question. I want to talk about it. And then I'd leave and then come back and they'd give me feedback. So that took me the longest period of time because I wanted to study fatigue and paramedics and if a gym intervention would make them better paramedics. And that's not what I ended up doing, but that was the start of my question. So you would expect your research question to evolve. You would expect that you can find readily, like fast, you can find some research to support either way, you know, in terms of paramedic podcasts as an educational tool. The other thing I advocate for students, and I'm being very finite here, is to go on Google Scholar and set up Google Scholar alerts. And I do this, I've done it for years. When I get a new student, I'll say, you know, find the key terms in your search area, put them into Google Scholar, and you get the publication like the day it comes out. You'll get it months before you'd normally even find it. So I have five keywords, paramedic and stress and heart rate variability and another one. And every Monday, I've got seven new articles to look at. Now, I may not save any of them, but over the years, I've saved many, many, many. And the other thing that I do is, and you know, when you have Abby Little on as your guest, that was one of the first things I told her to do, and she's doing the same thing. So you could do that. And as you're on standby somewhere, if there's ever such a thing, your Google alerts will come in, the latest in the scholarly articles will pop up, and you'll go, wow, here's one on a podcast where they measured it in second year paramedicine students in Peru. Perfect. All right. And that would help inform you. So think about your question, take that first dive into the literature. Think about whether we'll talk about methodology perhaps in another one, but think about those and think about getting on the leading edge, which is for me is Google Scholar alerts. So you can see what's coming out immediately, and then start bouncing your idea off people and find that subject matter expert who is as anxious as you are to explore it more. If you find that it's not resonating with the people that you're talking with, then cast the net wider or think, does this need to be refined or is there somewhere, because all research in one form or another will have either a formal or a kind of informal supervisory team. You know, for me, as a new early career researcher, I find the senior members of the research team mentor me, and it works out well. I am a supervisor for honors and for masters and for PhDs. So I offer them my supervisory experience. So, you know, that's how we start to build that relationship, because all of those honors, masters, PhD, they're all in multiples of years, right? One for an honors, two for a master's, and three full-time for a PhD or six part-time for a PhD. So finding that right person, maybe we'll talk later about how to interview your supervisor, can go a long way. Yeah. You're still probably thinking about how you're going to study, how your podcast made a difference in someone's life.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually quite intrigued with that. And I think you're going to be adding another thing to my to-do list. What next, really? So now we've got this interest and desire into researching something, and we've, you know, we've set up our Google alerts, and, you know, you're thinking about research and doing this with a bit more formality. What do you do next?
You have to decide whether you're going to frame that in an honors, whether you're going to frame it in a master's, a PhD, or nothing. Maybe it's just a study that you want to do. And if you're going to be going down the research route, you'll see from, I think you'll talk about the book later on from Elsevier, The Introducing, Designing, and Conducting Research for Paramedics. You'll have to be aligned with an institution, the ability to get institutional ethics, which means it's a proper way to do research. So again, do you want to do it because you want a paper on your resume? You want one. And I had some students wander up the hall a couple of years ago and said, Sandy, we want to learn about research, but we're not going any further with it. And we did a validity study on the AstroSkin biometric shirt, and they did the study. We wrote it up together, and it was published, actually just recently published, to the wider audience. Is this something that I want to take a year and do an honors, which is kind of what you do in the paramedicine world, or 2 year part-time? Do I want to do a master of philosophy or a master of research? Or am I setting the stage where I can come back and do a PhD eventually, knowing that I have to take one of those other two programs first? So as you start to read, and I started to read in 2013, Eric Drinkwater's name kept coming up, a noted exercise physiologist. And I contacted him, and he ended up being my supervisor. And that was just fortuitous. And that's how I found him. But you'll start to see who the content experts are in that area. And some may be approachable, some may not be. But again, if you did this, would you want to do it just as a paper, or would you want to do it as an honors, or would you want to do it as a master's?
It's a great question. I mean, it'd be nice to do it as an honors, but even just as a paper would be good.
Yeah. Okay. So quite doable. And in that case, you'd find someone, and as I said, as you start to do your research and you start to formulate if a PICO is appropriate or whether it's going to be simply a descriptive paper, you'll start to see names that will be start to reoccur. But not only that, you've started to build a research network through the Student Paramedic Podcast. You talk to Andy Bell, and you talk to me, and you talk to Nick Abusi, and you talk to Steve Whitfield. And you talk to all of these people that have done research. And there's nothing wrong with calling any one of them up to say, here's my idea. What do you think? And does that align with anything that might interest you? And then you're so set. Yeah. And what people should understand, and I want to sound like a dad here, but you need an established researcher, or a fairly new researcher, who can lend their expertise to get you started, especially if it's just going to be a one and done, which is like a paper. Absolutely. You'll need to align with an institution that will give you ethics, and it's the same in England as it is here. And yeah, you just need to carry that passion forward.
Absolutely. Can you get ethics without, like, is there independent ethics, or do you have to go to a university or something to get that paper sort of started through that, their ethics side of things?
Not necessarily, no. And aligning with an institution doesn't necessarily mean you get their institutional ethics, although you usually end up getting it. So when I studied New South Wales Ambulance Paramedics, I went to the Southeast Sydney Local Health District Ethics Committee and obtained ethics to do all my studies, and then went back to my institution and said, here's the ethics, and they gave me their own institutional ethics, and I was off. Ethics is important. Ethics is important because there has been some pretty dodgy research done over the years. And understanding the ethical responsibilities of researcher, participant, supervisor, research team, how money is handled, how you can't take pictures of your participants, things like that. It's perfect. It's perfect. And they're not meant to stop you from doing research, but they're meant to stop you from doing dodgy research, which you don't want.
Yeah, I can see how ethics is really important in that situation. It's good to know that you can get ethics through other independent sources. But you've got me thinking about a lot of things now, Sandy. You definitely do, as you mentioned before, spark imagination. So it's quite exciting.
It's real. You know, it's something you could do.
Absolutely. And it's great to not just think about research as this idea, but rather actually putting some context behind it. And and making it interesting, like for me, that does make me think about it and does make me think, oh, actually, do I want to do this study? This sounds really interesting. And yeah, it's nice. I wouldn't have thought that to do that myself.
And if nothing else, I still pop those terms into Google, including the scholarly article part, and see what others have done. And maybe that would kind of say, oh, all right, that's good to know. Because then you have to figure out if yours is I'm going to measure something, you know, I'm going to measure change in behavior in my listeners, you know, those that want to, then if you see glaringly that it's not been done, then there's this is the other thing too, is when you're doing research, if you're starting to find 17 other podcasts that have been studied in the same way, then you need to pivot. And that means move away from the original research question to say, maybe I'll try a different methodology, or maybe I'll reframe the question so it looks like this, or maybe I'll do it for 2 years, or maybe I'll just do it as a cross-sectional, like just one day. And, you know, that's what you get from reading. And in another podcast, probably we'll have to talk about how to appraise the quality of the literature that you're reading. I know that we all go to Google University, but believe it or not, not everything that's on the internet is true or of sufficient rigor for us to do our, to jump off into our research question. So I think framing it in terms of something that you can actually envision, and so what I'm trying to do is extend this to your listeners, is the way you start. And you start to have this dabble in the literature, and we talked about how to do that. And we started to talk about how to make the net a little bit wider in terms of, as you started talking about, go to database by database and figure out if you want to do some, maybe for you, all you want to do is a systematic literature review of podcasts as an educational tool. That's a paper right there. And that's where we'll talk about systematic reviews, but they follow a format. They're incredibly valuable pieces of information. And they're really, when you're an honors or a master's or a PhD, that's one of the first things that you publish, is the results of your findings from the literature. And refine your question, go up and down the hall, and that brings you kind of to the next steps of research.
Awesome. I think that's a fantastic introduction into how to get started.
I would agree. Yeah. I think you've got a project to do.
Sounds good. I'll add it to my list of things to do. But no, it's really exciting. And I hope that gives people that are listening, whether that be as a student, as a grad, or, you know, a few years in, just this idea of, you know, it's not unachievable. It's not unattainable. You know, you can just get that idea started, find something that interests you and get moving on it. So I think that's really a great way to get started on it. That is our first bite-sized episode into our research mini-series. The next episode is going to be on research methodology and actually how to design your research around that question or interest that you've got. So we hope that you've enjoyed this episode and hopefully it's changed some of your mindset towards it. Please keep an eye out on our social media in regards to how to get your hands on one of the copies of the Introducing, Designing and Conducting Research for Paramedics in order to help you go through more of the topics that we discussed today on this episode and in our future episodes as well. We've partnered up with Elsevier and they have been very kind in letting us have 5 copies of this textbook to give away to our lucky listeners. So please keep an eye out for that. If you've got any further questions, please reach out to us via social media or through our email, which is thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com. And please reach out to Dr. Sandy McQuarrie, and his details will be down below in the show notes.